Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And by LegalZoom, if you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC or nonprofit, get a DBA, and more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code AAA to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and Android products are worth at Gazelle.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 208, recorded on Tuesday, April 7th, 2015. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
Hello, Ron. How's it going?
It's good. It's good to be back in studio.
Yes, it's good to have a Ron to my left and a Ron to my right. That's right. It's double Ron day. How's it going? Ron Amadio of Ars Technica. How are you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
Radical. Even better. Two Rons. Better than one.
If two Rons aren't right, I don't want to be wrong.
You don't want to be wrong.
I don't want to be wrong. Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Cool. It's great to have you back. Always love getting you on the show and love reading your articles. We have a few of your write-ups actually today, and some of them are maybe like a week and a half old, but I thought they'd be perfect to talk about because when you do your articles for Ars Technica, it isn't just like a quick little couple of paragraphs. Like you spend days researching these things and then you come out with what kind of seems like a manual full of, you know, photos that cover the whole gamut and everything. So you kind of go deep into detail on these things. So it's always good to talk with you about it.
That's awesome. Thanks. Yeah, that's usually the goal, to write, I don't know, like the definitive version of whatever I'm writing usually.
Well, you're awesome at that. So let's take a look here. We have a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking about Android for Work, actually based on one of the articles that you wrote. And I think it's a kind of a cool thing that we haven't talked about a lot on the show, but you seem to have the inside scoop on that. Hands-on look at the Galaxy S6 Edge, which we're going to talk about sooner rather than later. I have it right here in my hot little hands.
I'm going to take it away from you.
Fine, take
there
it.
You
YouTube Kids app that's under scrutiny for showing ads to kids. And we'll get a little bit deeper. It's maybe a little more complex than that sounds. Google's 2014 security report for Android, which sounds dry, but is actually very interesting. There's some fascinating facts in there and more. But before we get into the news, let's just talk a little bit about the S6 Edge. There probably isn't a whole lot to say. We had Florence. There we go. Sorry, I was thinking of her Twitter ID. Florence of PC World on last week, and she talked a little bit about her impressions of the S6. Now, of course, we have the S6 Edge. Leo unboxed it right before MacBreak Weekly this morning, so we've got it kind of in person. And I know, Ron, you just got the S6, not the Edge, but the regular one that you're playing with. So we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but I have to say, in-person impression of the S6 Edge is hot, spelled H-A-W-T.
Very impressive. Yeah. Very hot. Very hot. It is thin. Look how thin that is.
And I don't know if it's actually thin or if it's just illusion thin because of the tapered edge.
I feel like there's a lot of illusions going on with this phone, because not only would the tapered edge make it look like it's super thin and you got a little bit of the camera button out, but not too much. But so in addition to that, but also because of the edge, it seems like if the, what struck me immediately was looking at stuff in the display, everything seemed to have depth.
Yes.
Like it felt a bit kind of like material design, kind of, you know,
three-dimensional.
Like, yeah, almost three-dimensional. And the subtle animation when you swipe from the right to the left, it doesn't just go right, left on the screens. It kind of goes right, left, and up. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, kind of it backs that optical illusion. I wonder how much of that playing with our eye is actually happening on this phone. Probably more than I realize.
Yeah.
But I dig it. I think this is, I mean, I'm really impressed by this phone.
It is surprisingly nice. Like, I've been, you know, everyone's been begging for years and years for Samsung to junk the whole plastic outside, and like the way that they built the first Galaxy in terms of the outside is pretty much the way they built the Galaxy S5. Like, it's basically the same plastic, but they finally decided to update, you know, the exterior, and it just feels so much nicer. Like, it feels like it's worth the $700 or whatever is
The metal, there's no plastic more. There's no, you know, it definitely feels more substantial. It does get hot. We did notice that.
Well, so this is Leo's phone, right? And I told you he unboxed it at 11 a.m. Pacific. It's now 5 p.m. Pacific. Google Play Store is still going nuts with, like, installing all of his apps and updating other apps and everything. I opened it up. So obviously it's been going all day, which is kind of crazy to me. Google Play Store doesn't take that long to update apps. I think Leo just installs a lot of apps on his devices. So it's a little warm. But yeah, and you know, one thing that I realized that it just didn't dawn on me from just like reading about it and seeing it online is a lot more and more we're doing things, you know, based on Android UI from the edges in. So swiping from the edge inside an app might pull out your side tray or whatever. And for some reason, that's like really nice to do on the edge.
Yep.
Because instead of dealing, and I know it sounds superficial and lame, but instead of dealing with this like hard, you know, like the edge that goes around the flat screen or whatever, you end up dealing with just like it's almost like it was meant to be that way. It just kind of glides over the edge to grab it. And I don't know, there's something very pleasing about that.
Yeah.
So I guess you guys didn't play with the fingerprint reader yet, but it actually works.
Yeah.
It's like as good as Touch ID on an iPhone now.
Wow.
And the camera, that is a very big camera hump, but the camera is phenomenal.
Yeah, like, that's what I keep hearing.
It is as good as an iPhone 6 camera. Not yours. You still have plastic on the back of yours that you need to peel off. So
what? What?
What's not plastic?
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. Oh man, Leo's good. That is funny. Leo, we'll do you a favor here in a second.
And
we'll,
peel that. There's off. One on the.
There's the one right.
On
there's
the
one right
there. Yeah. There too, which is like impossible to get off. I had to get it off with like a pair of tweezers.
How, you know, you could probably go for months not realizing that there was plastic.
And you wonder why everything looks a little cloudy.
I know. I'll see. That we're getting it. We're getting it.
There you go. You got a corner.
Good thing I haven't clipped my fingernails in a few days. I kind of feel weird doing this with Leo's phone. Like, I don't want to, like... Oh, no. I just tore the camera out of there.
There we go.
Oh, we got it.
Oh,
now it just... Now it looks smooth as silk.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Leo. You're welcome. It's the little things in life.
No, but before the show, Leo was raving about the camera already, even with the plastic.
Well,
on
no,
it.
But yeah, I will say, in his defense, the plastic actually etched out the hole for the camera. So it was protecting the glass around the hole. So thankfully, his pictures like weren't coming out cloudy. He's like, I have no idea what people were talking about, pictures on this phone.
So the few things I haven't liked so far, like if you go to the home screen and swipe over to Flipboard and then try to swipe back to the home screen quickly.
Okay.
Will yours actually do that? Because mine freezes. Yeah, that.
Oh,
that,
oh yeah.
That's super annoying.
I mean, now someone, that it's like loaded in, it's probably
now that
doing
it's loaded.
It.
But as someone who like fidgets with their home screen, I guess, as a habit, it wants to stop when you go to Flipboard. Because like Google Now can do this because Google is the home screen. Like the app is always loaded and it's the thing that's drawing your icons and all that. But Flipboard is not the home screen. So when you swipe over to Flipboard, you see a fake picture of Flipboard and then the app loads. And if it's been...
I saw the switch right there, actually.
Click on the little menu up there and open the settings, or if the picture... Now click the home button and swipe over. Yeah, now swipe back over to Flipboard and see what it does.
Yeah, you're right.
So, like, if the story has updated, you'll get that flash when it goes from the fake version to the real version. And it's you can turn it off, though.
Man, your attention to detail. Most people wouldn't notice that kind of stuff. Yeah, totally. Yeah,
there's a couple things like that where it's like the default software setup is not great, but you can turn it off. Mm-hmm. So for power users, it's not a big deal. But, you know, this is a Galaxy product, so a lot of, like, quote-unquote normal people will be buying it and will stick with the defaults.
Yep.
And I don't know. They're going to have some problems. Like, the default keyboard's pretty bad. And, the OK Google thing they have on there is, like, Hi Galaxy.
Oh, that's
so it's cute. Insanely slow.
Hi Galaxy. Oh, well,
you have to set it up.
I see. I was like, oh, that's confusing. It also says OK Google. So, sorry.
all the devices just lit up.
Jeez.
Well, it's never not funny.
I know. It's always without fail. Well, cool stuff. So, you just got the S6. I imagine you're going to put it through its paces as you usually do. I guess what? People see your review sometime in the next week or two, would you say?
Monday, I believe, is my terrifying deadline that I have to deal with.
Right. All right.
But it is a very nice phone, and it's, you know, Samsung's had a rough couple quarters, I guess, and I really like that their response was to kind of change everything and go all out with this phone. Like, I think it'll be really successful for them. Like, it's upgrading to this is a big deal.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, just the course of kind of the feedback in the press and, you know, just people talking about it on social media and everything has been very different this time around. You get a lot of people right now saying, wow, Samsung, this is, you know, you're doing things right. This is going to be a different year for you. And I suppose
this is going to be your year, Samsung. Don't worry. I realize that
last year was the only not your year, but this one will be your year again. You'll rise to glory.
You can do it, Samsung. Come on.
We believe in the scrappy upstart. Well, cool stuff. All right. So that is the Samsung Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge. Happy we talked about that. But you know what? There is other news. Let's do it.
Oh.
Who knows which one we'll get next?
Spin the wheel.
Let's try that again. The segment that was edgy before it was cool. It's time for Android News.
I'm not sure if we're going to get breaking or straight up Android News. Or
just don't know.
Do you?
Oh.
We could.
Could we?
We could, yeah.
Or is it a lollipop one?
Do the lollipop one.
Got it.
Because we got breaking news. A lollipop. Apparently.
All right. Some breaking news.
So... You got this?
No.
I don't have it open yet.
I just opened it. Well, Ron is the one who alerted us to this. So, Ron, what is breaking news?
What news is breaking?
Okay, a new version of the Google app came out, and Android Police, my awesome buddies, did a teardown of it. And in there is everybody can have a nickname now, so you can tell it to, like, call your mom or whatever, and it'll do that. Yeah, fine. But there is a flag in there for seamless hot word. It's an experiment. That nobody can really access yet except Google. But it sounds like the plan is going to be that you can say, OK, Google, and then immediately bang out your command without having to, like, pause and wait for it to boot up. So when they actually enable this, you're going to see voice commands on Android get a whole lot better, because you'll just be able to say, you know, OK, Google, send a message to my friend. Hey, let's go have a beer or whatever. I know I'm setting off everyone's phone. Sorry.
It's beautiful. But, it's wonderful. I love it.
But, like, the thing that's really bothered me is Google Glass has been Google's best voice client. And it's like 2 years old or whatever. But if you go back and watch, like, a video of Google Glass, you can say a hot word and then immediately say a command, and it can pick up everything. And phones have never gotten that feature, and now it sounds like they finally will.
Which
will be so much fun.
That's interesting. I just kind of took it for granted. I took it for granted because, yes, on Google Glass you could do that, and I just kind of assumed that you could everywhere else. My problem was thinking about the command and saying it out loud seamlessly without the pause is really difficult for me anyway. So I didn't know that you couldn't already do
that. It's
like
not a protocol or whatever, but it's a way of thinking around it. Right. To put in that pause because you need it.
Right, because I need it to be like, okay, what was I going to ask Google again? Oh, right.
Yeah.
So I just kind of assumed that it was. Right. But okay. Well, that's.
You have to wait. That's why it boops and the little screen pops up. You have to wait for that because it's not listening yet. But I guess Glass recorded all the time or immediately recorded, or I have no idea how. Just Glass is on like a whole other level for voice commands, or it used to be before they ruined it, where you would just say voice commands and it was like boom, 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 and would instantly keep up with you. And it was awesome. And I really miss it.
Well, cool. So hopefully we'll see that soon. Of course, these APK teardowns are always like, great, but because I have no idea when it's going to happen. And sometimes those features like there. Take a year to get there.
Listen, the code is in there. It's not unlocked yet or nothing uses it, but we know it's in there. So you just have to wait for it.
Yeah, you got to be patient.
Yeah.
And I know that you know all about that, Ron, because when, you know, Android Police is your alma mater. That's where you kind of started this whole APK teardown thing.
Yep. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, but they're still going strong. They don't need me. They're good.
It's your legacy.
Cody's holding it down.
Okay, so last week we did talk on the show a little bit about Arc. That's the app runtime for Chrome, which basically allows you to, you know, bring Android apps into like Chrome OS and that sort of stuff. First off, I want to start with an email. Tony Baker wrote in and said, I was listening to the show on the way home. I was shocked that you missed a big part of the Android apps on Chrome. And I think that we did kind of overshadow this.
Yeah.
The fact that they will work in the Chrome browser basically means Google just put all the Android apps on every Windows and Mac computer. Google Chrome already has apps that run outside the browser in a window, so it'll work the same for all the Android apps through Chrome. And I think in my mind, I was like, oh, yeah, now it works on Chrome OS. Great. But the bigger picture part of that is Chrome OS is Chrome. Therefore, this means that Android apps on Chrome cross-platform.
Yeah, I just zeroed in on Chrome OS and stayed there.
Yeah, me too.
And didn't think about the wider kind of ramifications of it. And that really is a game changer. I mean, now with the exception of iOS, you can get your app on anything.
Yeah.
But it's also the kind of thing that I kind of want to see it before I believe it.
Yeah. You know? Now, Ron Amadio, you wrote up, of course, you know, one of the many things that you've written up lately that goes into detail a lot more than I saw a lot of other articles written on Arc. And you basically point out two things. All developers obviously can now use Arc, and now Arc runs on any desktop OS with Chrome. But kind of beyond that, something we were kind of wondering about last week, but it's totally in there, is you say Arc now includes Play Services. That's a pretty big deal.
It includes a couple APIs from Play Services. Okay. So Arc has been out for a while. It came out, like, it's still beta, but the first beta came out a while ago and didn't support Play Services at all. So the Play Services is going to be like, it's now like a really big chunk of Android. It's probably like half of the cool stuff in Android, like anything that plugs into Google. So like Google Maps APIs and Google Sign On and a million other things that most apps need. It now supports like five of the most common APIs, I think, like Google Sign On and some other stuff. Because before it was basically like an unsupported open source Android fork, kind of, where like anything that needed Play Services would just straight up crash and not work on it. But this is probably the biggest step they've taken to have a universal binary where basically all Android apps are going to run on every platform except iOS. And it's going to be crazy that they'll just be able to go to developers and say, hey, write your app for Android and we'll make it run on Android, Windows, Mac, Linux, Chrome OS, everything. They'll still make apps for iOS first, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But it's just like a killer thing to go to developers and do. So I looked into this a lot, and it's based on – right now Arc is based on Android 4.4. So all the apps on there kind of run on like Dalvik instead of the new Art thing that's in Lollipop. So, I mean, they still have a lot of updating to do. There's still a lot of work to do. It's a beta, and you know, Google got a hold of me and was like, tell people it's a beta. It's not done yet. But there's something where like you can submit an app to the Play Store to publish it, but Google will only let people on Chrome OS install it right now. So there's still a lot of work to do. Um, But the biggest missing pieces are probably that you can't do like in-app purchases right now.
Right.
All the Google Play Store stuff is not there. So basically the Chrome Web Store needs to die, because right now it pushes apps up to the Chrome Web Store, which it is not prepared to do at all. And actually, if you do, I think the Chrome Web Store really will die, because if you look at Google Play for Education, the Play Store serves Chrome apps on that, which is like this. One of the Chrome guys told me this the other day. Not from Google, but a person. But if you do Google Play for Education, there's just a section in the Play Store that says like Chrome apps.
Interesting.
So I guess they're going to bring this out to everybody, but I don't know. That blew my mind.
I mean, that was kind of one of my questions for you, for both of you, is like, do we see, like, this is an interesting first step. Do we see a point in time where, much like developing for tablet versus phone and just packing it all into one single APK, suddenly developers are like, nope, you know, now you can get it on your phone, your tablet, you can get it in Chrome browser, and it's all just served from a single APK that's served from a single source. Because right now, if you're getting it through the Chrome App Store and it gets updated on Android, you know, you end up with this potentially like this Amazon App Store problem of the apps are over there, but is the developer updating them there as fast as they are here too? And
too much
that could be cleaned up a little bit. You know?
I did like in Ron, in your breakdown where you mentioned the Arc Welder app. I think that's a really cool tool for developers to use. If people haven't checked that out, at least, you know, from my understanding, at least from reading it, is that it's an app that allows you to load your app and then see how it looks in the different sizes, or basically just kind of test it for the different kind of platforms.
Right, and anybody can use that. Just like grab an APK and stick it in Arc Welder. And, you know, it asks you, like, do you want to run this in phone mode or tablet mode, in landscape or portrait? So you just check a couple boxes and hit go, and, like, the Android app pops up on your screen. Yeah. And I tried this on a Mac and on Windows, and it just works.
That's
so
cool.
Like, this is, other than, you know, Google has to get the rest of the Play Services stuff under control, which I guess is going to be the next step. And they really need to just make the Google Play Store work. And then this is going to work. It's going to be like a universal, like, write once, run everywhere kind of thing. It's going to be really cool.
And that's such a huge mountain to climb when you think about it. When you think about going back to, you know, one of our favorite apps, Pocket Casts, and when we had them on, we were talking about it, how they've quietly had this little web version of Pocket Casts. Now they don't need it. Now, if they do this, I can just run the same Pocket Cast app that I'm running on my Chrome browser, that I'm running on my phone, that I'm running on my tablet. You know,
although I suppose there is something to be said for something that's desktop optimized.
True, yeah, but
I mean, at some point,
but you're optimizing it
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine the desktop app is the same as the tablet optimization, right? I mean,
that is an interesting thought to kind of go through, like. Say this totally works and you can run any Android app you want on your computer. What app do you want to run?
Yeah.
I can't think of too many.
I know. That's kind of the problem that I have right now. It's like, all right, this is really neat. But most of them have like a separate app component or a website or whatever.
Games, I guess.
Yeah.
Games, I mean.
But that game better be fun to play on a desktop, in a desktop environment.
I'll tell you what, now that baseball has started, the At-Bat app is way easier to watch a game on that than the MLB website. MLB website and all the different team websites are just like a Byzantine collection of like links from design from 8 years ago. It's just impossible to fit. I just want to watch the game. How do I log in? So I would take that app. I'd put it on there.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, interesting stuff. I just keep thinking, if you've ever been on the Google campus, there's a point of the Google campus where there's the Android guy covered in Chrome. And this just kind of keeps reminding me of that. Their plan is coming together nicely. Yeah. So,
well, speaking of plans, Google released a year in review of Android security for 2014 with some pretty fascinating details about the scope of Google's approach to security on the Android platform. I know we talk about security quite often on the show and the people's concerns about malware and all things like that. So some interesting facts coming out of this report. Google shows that less than 1% of the devices showed any trace of potentially harmful applications whatsoever.
They call those PHAs for short.
A little a little abbreviation.
Yeah.
0.1% of devices that install apps only from the Play Store ever. My scroll's all off. Sorry. 0.1% of devices that install apps only from the Play Store ever show a PHA, a potential harmful app.
0.15%.
Yep.
If you're downloading specifically from the Play Store.
Exactly.
That's minuscule.
Now, keep in mind that, on the other hand, only 0.5% of sideloaded apps on rooted devices showed potentially harmful apps as well. So that's a little kind of a balance to that.
The report is really long.
Yes.
And there's a lot of data in there. And at first, I opened it up, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not just going to read articles about this. I'm going to read through this. And I was scared.
Yes.
But then as I was kind of scanning through and really kind of picking it apart, it's fascinating the level of detail that they're, you know, like a lot. I'd say the region in the world that has the most problems with these kind of, you know, with malware and security issues are Russian devices. Like, yep. You see the Russian level is like by and you know, far and wide, just
only because they can't track China.
True. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, China, who knows what China
true.
Looks like?
But
yeah.
Truth.
But yeah, Russia and China are kind of the same ecosystem where there's this big non-Google Play contingent, which requires you to uncheck the unknown sources box, which then it's ready for the virus flood when you start downloading stuff that's mm-hmm. not on the Play Store.
I was going to say, I'm almost afraid to go to Russia for the fear that as soon as I got off the plane, my phone would just immediately be inundated with harmful apps.
Yeah. I would just go up in a cloud of smoke and be like, "What? I don't know what happened."
Yeah.
Oh, Russia.
So I felt like this was a 50-page screw you
yes.
to Tim Cook, who yep. last year called Android a toxic hellscape.
Oh, absolutely.
And someone at Google was like, get me the statistics. And they went out and did this big report. And it's like, no, there's not. There's really no viruses. I've never heard of anybody get a phone virus.
Yet you hear all the time the story that comes up about, you know, the malware yep. and Android. And it paints such a dire picture.
Which is released by an antivirus company.
Exactly.
That wants you to go and buy a product. And yep.
it's safe to say, and Jason in the notes here, Jason puts the moral of the story is that it's rarely as bad as the alarmist news stories make it out to be, but on the safe side, always use the Play Store. Clearly Google is working to ensure the devices are safe and malware doesn't get through. So go with that. You know, when you uncheck install applications from untrusted sources, just beware that you're taking your life in your own hands there. And wherever you get that APK, it might be carrying something bad. So just stick to the Play Store.
And even when you do that, it's still ridiculously low. They're saying 0.5%. Yep. 0.5% of sideloaded apps on rooted devices showed PHAs.
I still don't feel like Android is prepared really to deal with a security problem. Because like the only other operating system on this scale is Windows, which has like 1.5 billion users. Android has like 1 billion. And it's like Microsoft, if they have a security vulnerability, they're like, okay, we found a huge problem. It's on Windows Update. Everybody's going to download it right now.
Yeah.
Google, if they have a thing like that, it's like, okay, we found a huge problem. We fixed it in AOSP, and it's not going to go to anybody. Just nobody. They're going to call up Samsung and be like, hey, could you put this patch out? And Samsung's going to be like, no. Like, there's no way to get code out to people quickly right now. There's nothing. So if there's a huge security problem, we're all just going to deal with it.
Yeah. Oh, man, I just... Damn you, Hangouts. I just totally lost my train of thought. Do you remember years and years ago this app called Toddler Lock that overtakes your phone? And so there's no way to cancel out of it.
I remember that one. And
yes, I installed it on my wife's phone because my 2-year-old was playing with her phone, and now my wife can't get her phone. So I just got distracted totally. You can take that, Lisa. Thank you. Bye. Yes. Now I'm like, oh, crap.
My wife can't use her phone.
Well, let's just take a break.
Let's not take a break. You know what?
It's nice to unplug once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just step away from it.
Oh, it's true. And she probably does need to step away from her for email from time to time. Hey, how about OnePlus real quick? We'll go ahead and change the subject here. OnePlus has been working hard to create their own kind of flavor of Android Lollipop in light of all the stuff that's been happening with CyanogenMod. And OnePlus since February. After a few delays, they finally published Oxygen OS to their site. They give you instructions for install that require the OnePlus One users to unlock their device and then flash the ROM. It's not a difficult process by any means for me. I'm sure some people would be totally intimidated by it, but you know, I'm sure a lot of listeners of this show have done this sort of thing before. And, you know, it's a light touch. It's a light touch on modifications, but really it's super close to stock. I went ahead and did it, you know, in like 15 minutes earlier today. And now finally, like my OnePlus One, even though I'm not really using it, but part of the reason why I opted for the Nexus 5 over the OnePlus was because I wanted to have Lollipop. Yep. And now I have it. This is an early kind of step, but it's their stable first version of Oxygen OS. And, you know, aside from a few modifications, like there's like double tap to wake. Supposedly, I have it active. Hopefully, I do. There we go.
There you go.
Yep. You know, and a few of the other kind of like lock screen things, like you can do V to turn the flashlight on and other stuff like that. So it's not as highly customizable as CyanogenMod 12S will be once CyanogenMod publishes that update to the OnePlus One. But I would say anyone, you know, that has a OnePlus that's interested should definitely take a look at Oxygen OS. Do realize that if you flash it based on their instructions, you're going to wipe your phone and you're starting over.
It's like a factory reset, basically.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, exactly. But I will say it was kind of nice to do that. I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of stopped flashing
your
ROMs.
Hands dirty.
I know. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm in terminal now. So I don't know. And it's nice to have Lollipop on the OnePlus. It makes it feel complete.
That's cool.
It's still a great device. It's a great device.
You know? I like the rhetoric that the CEO had about the delays. To everyone just to calm the F down.
I know, calm the F down. I know, right?
Oh, yeah, the CyanogenMod CEO. Yeah, these two, CyanogenMod and OnePlus, man, they're like the drama queens of the Android ecosystem. It's like always something with them. But I like that the reason CyanogenMod isn't out for the OnePlus yet is because they said they were having problems with certification. And that's Google certification, since it's an unlocked phone. And the CyanogenMod CEO is always out there saying, we're going to take Android away from Google. And it's like, hey, I bet if you were less of a dick to Google, like all the time, your certification would probably go a lot smoother.
Yeah, you got to wonder if that kind of got in the way of that or not.
Yeah.
you might want to screw us, but we still kind of control a large area of what you're doing. And so, yeah. It's interesting on the about page on this, it says Android version 5.0.2, Oxygen OS 1.0.
There you go.
Yeah, a little fork of it. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's their version, their ROM. So.
Yeah.
But anyways, I approve.
It's been 5 months now. This is incredibly slow.
I know. That's the hard part here. And you know, OnePlus is obviously a new company, and they've made mistakes along the way from a PR perspective. And I think we even talked about this on last week's show, like coming out and saying, we guarantee that we will have an update by this date is almost like. Like, you don't do that because you just jinxed yourself. And it's actually very, very hard, apparently, to make that happen. So maybe a little bit less specific. There, you know, over.
But if CyanogenMod wants to be a real company now, like, this is what you have to deal with as a software-only company. Like, you need to get your updates out faster than this. And it's not even out yet. And it's like, you know, 1 to 2 months is, like, good, not five.
Yep.
So then does CyanogenMod prioritize the devices that were sold over kind of their open source side? Or I imagine they must have
I would hope so.
Different
I mean, it's
sides
like,
of the company working on each.
They
support so many devices with the open source version. You know what I mean? So I could understand why that would take.
People paid for this, and that don't ask for ETAs. We don't, you know, it's done when it's done. That's great when it's a free distribution that nobody pays for. But now it's like it's the primary software for a phone that people put out all this money for, and it's not good customer service. This is the slowest in the industry.
Yeah, like once you're a business, you have customers that need answering, and you got to prioritize those, and you can't treat it like an open source project anymore.
Yeah, so, fair enough. Yeah. Okay, we heard about Android at work. I believe it was last year at I/O, and I can't believe that I/O is almost here again.
I know.
This show is a crazy time machine to me. but anyways, here we are, almost I/O. Okay, so Android at work, we heard a little bit about it. And Ron, you kind of dove in feet first and kind of picked it apart, took a look at what you liked, what you didn't like, kind of the fruits of the Divide acquisition and everything. So kind of what was your experience with Android for Work? Do you think this is a good solution for bringing Android more into the enterprise? Do they do things right? What do you think?
Yeah, it's really nice. You know, it gives you, like in that first screenshot, it gives you basically a work version and a home version of all your apps, of like whatever you want. And once you get everything set up, it works very nicely. Like you have work Gmail with all your work stuff in there, and home Gmail, and everything separate. And it basically plugs into Android's multi-user framework and kind of gives you two different users on one home screen. So, you know, you have different sets of data, but you get all the apps end up in the app drawer, all the notifications end up separated but in the same notification panel. And it just does a great job of separating data, but you need a Google Apps account to set it up. So that's like $5 per month per user that you have to pay. And then you have to do this crazy setup with like the Google Apps dashboard and the Google Apps device policy app that goes on your phone. And it is the most unpleasant setup of a Google product I've ever had.
Oh, wow.
And
that's potentially saying a lot.
Yeah, no, I was reading Ron's article, and as an administrator on Google Apps and wanting this, you know, I was reading it. I'm like, oh, this is great. Oh, that's great. I love the little work icon. That's great. And then I got to the, how did you describe setup? Setup team is a Byzantine nightmare. Yeah, Byzantine nightmare. And I was like, oh, no.
It's like 15 or 16 steps, like, on your computer. And it's like, then you can pick up a cell phone and sign in and you know, start all this crazy stuff. And it's like, you would think there would just be an Android for Work setup screen. Yeah, that's the button that you press. It's like, it's insane. It's so hard. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
And that's probably due to the fact that it's two separate teams. You know, like there's the apps for work team and there's the Android team, and this is a case of two teams trying to come to work together. And so you know that someone on the apps for work team has had a ticket to, you know, to add the enable Android, and they're like, well, I'm working on other things. All right, fine, here, there's your link. And it's just like, and it's buried, you know.
What you want is for like a unified Google service. And no, what it is this third-party Android Work app is talking to this third-party Google for Work app, and they both happen to be made by Google. But like at some point, you copy-paste a code from one section of the dashboard to the other, and it's just so crazy. Like nothing talks to anything else, and you're the go-between, and you have to set up everything else. But I guess if you're a professional IT administrator, you're used to this level of pain.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Enterprise IT app. Yep. But for small businesses, no, you will never, ever figure out how to set this up.
Interesting.
Which is why no one else has written about it. And when I did this, there was no
like, I don't know how to do this stuff.
There was no documentation when I did this, because I did it the first week. And there's like instructions now that are out there that make it a little easier.
Right.
It's just a headache.
Now, you mentioned that this is, you know, a lot of this revolves around Divide, which is an app and service. It was on iOS and Android that was acquired by Google last year, that was all about kind of separating work and your private, you know, your personal data on your device. But this obviously, now that it's baked into the system, allows for kind of a deeper integration than I imagine it could do as an app. Does that,
I don't know, does that make the experience better? What exactly does that mean that it brings? What are they able to do with that deeper integration?
Just because they can plug to, well, there's a user, there's a multi-user framework now. And I guess Divide didn't do that. They would kind of stick their own like little sandbox on top of Android and try to split stuff out there. And you know, they did the same thing on iOS, which has no multi-user stuff at all. So it's probably more secure in that, you know, everybody has separate files and that's all kind of at the OS level. Mm-hmm. And you, like, it plugs into the Play Store. You get a, it is called Google Play for Work, which is like the worst product name in the world. But yeah, the Google Play Store for Work will have all of your work apps in it once you set them up. And that's another insane process. Like, you go on a desktop computer and go to Google Play for Work on a desktop and copy the URL of the app and then paste it into the Google Apps dashboard and then go to a whitelist section and then it will show up on your phone. But you know, you get separate updates and separate data, and it, once you get it set up, it works perfectly. Like, it does all the separate user stuff you would want it to work. There's separate share panels, and it's just because it's the OS, it's all like perfectly integrated, and you can't copy paste from one to the other. Like, they're very good at data separation.
Yeah, I saw the cross out. I just like Google Play for Work.
I just envision when you want to install like a game in Google Play for Work, it would be Google Play for Work for play. Play. Yeah.
And then if it's like SimCity or some sort of like working based game, it could be Google Play for Work for Play for Work.
For working. Yeah. Is it confusing at all just in use to have like two different versions of an app residing on your device? Or I guess the icons denote. So I guess
they all have little orange badges, and there's badges on the icons, on the notifications, on the recent apps list. Like, you'll have two listings. Some of them, the colors are even different. It's really well done. And if they could just add a button that says enable Android for Work, like, right, I don't understand why this is tied to a service that takes a $5 monthly fee.
But of course you do, because they want people to use the apps for business. You know, like, they want to have it be a value add, and they're not going to go through the work to make this work on an exchange server or some other different email system. You know, they're going to say, hey, listen, if your organization is already using Google Apps for Work and you're using Android, boom, now it's easy. It's easy to link them. You know, you would think that the work would be done to make that setup on the admin side on the Google Apps for Work, that, or Apps for Business, whatever, that much easier. Right. But again, that goes to what we're saying. It's two different teams that probably don't talk very well to one another. But I'm not surprised at all that this is just, you know, it requires a Gmail account or a Google Apps account.
Well, I mean, I would assume like the $5 would go toward hosting, you know, all the stuff that Google hosts, and that you can, you know, have a Gmail at your custom web address and all that stuff. But like, if you have two Twitter accounts or something, it would be kind of cool to be able to set up two Twitter icons with this, you know, with this technology. Like, it's not necessarily, I don't see it as necessarily like this hardcore business thing. Like, I think normal people would like to have copies of the same app. Like,
yeah, right.
I bet most of us have more than one Gmail address, and it would be cool to kind of hop between them through icons, I think. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool stuff. Thank you for talking a little bit about that, because I've definitely had kind of questions, because I feel like you heard about it, and every once in a while at I/O you hear about these things and you're like, oh, that's going to be a big deal. And then nothing.
Yeah.
And you wait for months and months and months, and there we go. So I appreciate that. All right, Ron.
All right. Well,
I'm kind of amazed.
I'm excited. We've been talking recently about how we want to hear from you, the All About Android community. We want to have you guys email in or call in or send us a video mail. And you guys have answered the call. So first up, we've got Dan, who sent in this video mail about the topic of learning how to develop Android apps. So, Brian, let's hear from Dan.
Dear Jason, Ron, and esteemed guests, I'm a systems librarian in Sudbury, Ontario, Canada, and I've been a listener since episode one. One of the show topics that comes up from time to time is, how does somebody learn how to develop Android apps? As the founder of our local Google developer group, GDG, I have a biased answer. You get together with other people, and you learn with them. In our case, we've been holding monthly meetings for over 2 years, and while not every meeting focuses on Android development, there's always some hands-on activity or development subject to sink your teeth into. You can find a list of GDGs all around the world at developers.google.com. Just click on the community button at the bottom, and we'll be listed at the very top. For learning Android development specifically, many GDGs ran a dev study jam through February and March this year. This is a group learning exercise where we used Udacity's Android Fundamentals course, which was created by Googlers such as Rito Meyer and Catherine Kwan, as the basis of weekly meetings, one module per week. Each week we would review and discuss the hurdles we ran into in the previous module and prepare for the coming week's work. It's a great way to stay motivated, and while I've contributed patches to open source Android apps in the past, for the first time I feel like I have a complete understanding of how to develop Android apps all the way from the data layer through to the creation of responsive, accessible user interfaces. And all the materials are available for free. So, two takeaways. Be social and find or start a GDG near you. And consider some of the freely available online courses to get a comprehensive intro to Android development. Hope this helps, and many thanks for a great show. Dan Scott.
I think that's great advice because great so advice. Often in the modern internet world, we think that all of our answers come online. But it turns out there's other people that are in the same situation as you yep. that maybe, I don't know, meeting them face to face might actually help.
Quite honestly, is a long-lasting old legacy in computers.
Yeah, it totally is.
If you remember correctly, the Apple One was debuted at the Homebrew Computer Club in Silicon Valley.
Totally.
You know, is a group of people who are all into computers who would get together once a week and talk about stuff. That still happens.
Yeah.
Yep. That's great. I mean, it's not as much as I don't want to take away from what we're about to talk about with our sponsor, but learning online is great, but it can be very solitary and can be very alone. And sometimes it's good to work with somebody and be together in a group of people. But that said, learning online is an awesome resource as well.
So. I think what it is, it's a combination of all things.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Like
don't necessarily need to only get your information online or get your information through forums or watching videos on YouTube or whatever, wherever else you're going to find your information online, but going to these meetings and actually sitting down and talking with people about the pain points, and you end up learning a lot just by being exposed to other people's ideas, and a lot of that comes from face to face. So I think it's a really good reminder because so often we talk about these kind of things, and we don't really talk about the whole like go meet people thing.
Yeah.
And even if we do, like I've always hated the idea of networking. I hate. Networking, in air quotes, just as a concept. But it doesn't have to necessarily be I'm going because I'm going to meet these people. It's I'm going for the information and through a shared kind of appreciation of the content and knowledge that's there, you end up meeting people. Well, it just kind of happens.
There's something,
that can be a big deal.
There's something kind of cheesy about a networking event where you go and there's an open bar and you got your badge and who you're with, whatever. And there's something about going to a group with a purpose. And like, so for example, and Gina talked about it a lot before she left the show, but there's a great tech meetup in New York City that they presented ThinkUp at that I used to go to when I lived in New York back in like 2005, 2006. And it was just a bunch of tech-minded, entrepreneur-minded people who got together once a week and saw presentations of startups and talked and stuff like that. It was a networking event but with a mission and with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of things can be immensely powerful in terms of the connections, the learnings, and just the socializing. You know, like it can be so easy to stay in your apartment or stay in your house in front of that screen and type away and stay on Twitter and just stay on in whatever kind of message board back world that you live in. But sometimes it's so great to just go out and talk to somebody and you find I can tell you how many times at events like that I found someone who has the same problem I've had and they've solved it, and then I could follow up with them later on and figure out how to fix it. Yeah.
So that's what's so much fun about I/O, like just going and getting to meet all of these people. I guess, like I guess for me, I spend most of the year locked in a room when it's not CES or whatever, some trade show, and it's really cool to just kind of go to go to California and meet everybody. And I got to meet Jason last year, and it's really cool. It's fun.
Yeah, it is awesome, and I agree, and I'm looking forward to it. And we'll get a drink or something.
I'll be around afterwards.
All right,
don't forget me.
We'll let you know. all right, so let's do think our first sponsor of today's episode actually totally fits in with what we're just talking about. Lynda.com. It's fantastic for problem solvers, for the curious, for people who want to make things happen. You know, if you want to take better photos, build a better website, master Photoshop, sharpen your negotiation skills. That's what lynda.com is all about. It has everything you need to feed your curious mind. Some of the courses we recommend here: up and running with cloud service APIs, using Java to program the Google App Engine, Android Studio Essential Training. They also have this awesome course called Building a Note-Taking App for Android, which is going to teach you how to create a complete mobile note-taking app from start to finish. And within hours, you're going to create a working app and learn the basics of Android development in the process. I've checked out a ton of videos personally on music production, on soundproofing my studio, on video editing, on After Effects work, when I thought, hey, well, I don't want to hire someone to do this simple After Effects thing. Maybe I'll learn how to do it. Turns out After Effects is really hard, but I still learn things.
Yeah. I learned that.
Yes. I have a much better appreciation of how much work and knowledge goes into things like that. But that's the beauty of it, right? Lynda has all these instructors who are professionals in their field. They're top experts. They're passionate about teaching these topics to you. And it just makes it easy to really kind of go to the source and learn what you need to learn. And it's fun, you know, to learn in this way, too. You learn at your own pace. Courses are actually structured so you can watch them from start to finish. Or if you prefer, you can check them out in bite-sized pieces. You can browse each course transcript and then follow along or search for your answer and skip right to that point. And, of course, taking notes as you go. Refer to those later. You can download tutorials and watch them on the go. That includes access on your Android or iOS device. You can create, you can save playlists of courses that you want to watch and customize your learning path and share that with friends, colleagues, or team members. Your lynda.com membership gives you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all for one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an expert, you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, I want you to go visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid and sign up for your free 10-day trial. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. We thank them for their support of this show and the TWiT Network. Lynda's fantastic, and it's practically a never-ending resource of amazing videos and knowledge, so check it out. All right. We've kind of already done a little bit of hardware, but let's do some more.
All right, so we got to play with the Samsung Edge. What was the official title? The
Galaxy S6 Edge.
It's getting harder and harder to know the order that things.
Edge Mega.
Right, so we got to play with it. We were impressed by it. We were wowed by it. But of course, there are some critics, and those critics like to break things. You remember Bendgate?
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, Ben. I'm getting real tired of anything that ends in gate, by the way.
I know.
I used to like it. Now I
don't
like
it. Gate is a thing.
But yeah, so remember when Samsung poked fun at Apple during last year's Bendgate by tweeting a picture of the Note Edge with the tagline curve, not bent? Well, of course, now Bendgate is something that Samsung's got to deal with.
You have to admit that's kind of good.
Yeah, it was.
Curved, not bent.
Yeah, it's good. So SquareTrade put the S6 Edge to the test with a single bar flex test against an iPhone 6 Plus. Both phones bent at 110 pounds of pressure, but the S6 curve had significant screen cracking at that point as well.
Now, Brian, what you're showing, this is actually Samsung's response. If you scroll down, I believe below that, they kind of put it out of order. This is SquareTrade's, and I will warn you.
It's graphic.
This may hurt.
Yeah.
It may hurt to watch some of these.
You might
want to
look away.
I think if you go more, that hurts.
So that's the iPhone.
Yeah. Right. Still hurts. Still hurts. Anytime I see that glass pop, it brings back memories.
How do you get 100?
That's not bending the way the people had it bend in their pockets, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
You'd have a very pointy butt for that to happen.
So I'll care about this when someone tells me the Galaxy S6 Edge bent in their pocket, which is what people were saying about the iPhone.
Yep.
Truth.
I mean, it's a crusher bot. Of course it's going to bend it.
Right.
Like it's 110 pounds of pressure in that one spot Like
now, have we heard? Okay, so I was definitely when Bengate was happening. Yep. I was definitely on the side of this matters if it's happening in people's pockets. If it's just happening on a machine, it doesn't matter a whole lot. But if people are actually just have a phone in your pocket and you sit down in normal use and then it's bent, then that does matter. Even if it's small numbers, people need to know about it. So that was my stance on it. Have we heard about that since happening with iPhones, or was it just
no? It died quickly because Apple,
who knows if it just hasn't happened or if Apple has just provided really great support, which they said they were going to.
Yeah.
And that's great. That's what they should do.
I was impressed by this with Samsung and their response, though.
Yeah.
Because Samsung came back, and that was the video, Brian, that they first started showing. Samsung came back with a video of their own that outlined their 3-point bend test process and how the phone passed the test in their testing, and showing what they went into and what they looked at in terms of when they're testing the phone. And this was a really well-produced video that kind of explained what they're looking for and how much pressure to put on the bend and all that sort of stuff. And it's kind of hard to argue. I mean, you push hard enough, the thing's going to break.
Anything, yeah. Pretty much anything.
Yeah.
So, it has a breaking point.
So, I mean, good on Samsung for a intelligent, professional response. Yeah.
So, Squarespace did it on an S6 Edge. They did it on an S6 Edge, and a flat S6 has a much bigger side.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it would stand up to more abuse. But again, I would love to have someone tell me, yeah, this thing totally bent in my pocket when I didn't, put it in a robo phone crusher or whatever. But I don't know. Phone thinness is dumb. And I would like for us to stop making thin phones and make big phones with big batteries. And then we wouldn't have to deal with any of this bend crap at all. Because I don't care that my phone is like 8 millimeters thin or however crazy these things are now.
Yeah.
Like make it 10 millimeters thin and put a big battery in it.
Yeah. More and more, I'm right there with you. Battery kind of trumps all as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. Well, speaking of other phones, other new phones in the marketplace. So last week Miriam was here with
yeah, it was a few weeks
was
ago.
It was a few weeks ago. This is all a blur. Been on the road for two weeks, man. I'm tired.
It's okay.
So we were looking at the HTC One M9, mm-hmm. and Miriam was very pro it. She, with the exception of the camera,
yeah,
was
I think it was the
about.
Camera was the only downside.
Ron, you have a different opinion.
I just want to see more from HTC. Like they're clearly losing in the smartphone market, right? And it's like if it's a race, they're already behind, and Samsung is moving much faster than them, and they're like slowing down. Like the changes between the M9 and the M8 are so small that to me it's like a huge disappointment. I mean, they put the 810 in it, and it's super hot, and it's not that much faster than the Snapdragon 801 or 5 or whatever was in the M9 or the M8. Mm-hmm. And it's the exact same design, and it's not a competitive phone to me. Like I want to see new design. I would like to see, I don't know, everybody screwed because of this Qualcomm thing other than Samsung. But, you can get more for your money. Like Samsung changed everything about the Galaxy S6 and they had a couple bad quarters, but they're still like in first place, and they changed all this stuff about their phone and came up with an awesome camera. And like, show me a person that will pick an HTC One over a Galaxy S6. I don't think anybody's going to buy an M9.
Well, I thought the headline of your review on Ars Technica really summed it up, that it feels like an afterthought, and that,
HTC, they want to be a general electronics company now, and they do cameras and a
VR
clone and VR goggles and all this other stuff. And they're like, oh yeah, we still have to make a cell phone this year. And they put this out and they changed they addressed the lowest hanging fruit that they could and didn't do anything like difficult that took a ton of effort. I don't want to say a curse word. It just feels like they didn't. It feels half butted. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Yeah.
Like it just feels like they didn't try very hard to make to make a good flagship phone. Like this does not compete with the Galaxy S6 at all.
Right. Well, I strongly urge everybody in the audience to go to Ars Technica and read your article, because not only does it have your great analysis, but it's got graphs, it's got data, it's got photo examples. This is probably one of the more in-depth reviews of a phone that I've read where I walked away from it, because I've been a fan of HTC and I've liked what they've done with the One line. I've never actually owned one or used one, but the M9, I came out of it thinking that, okay, great, this is a nice iteration or whatever, but looking at it from the other direction, whereas is it enough to just iterate on a design and iterate on a phone product now, or do you need to be pushing the ball forward the way the other companies are? Mm-hmm. And I kind of more on the side of you need to be innovating, you need to be moving forward, and at least get a good camera in there.
Yeah, I'm just of the position of you're not winning. HTC is not winning. They needed to do something crazy to get ahead of everybody else, and it's like they're in last place and everyone is moving faster than them. That's what I see from HTC right now.
Yeah, and if you're not winning and you put out a phone that is very iterative and just like the previous, then it's almost like you've given up a little bit at that point. It's like, why didn't you try harder? Try harder next time.
Yeah.
All right, so there we go. Email. Actually, I have an email and a post from the Google Plus community, because we have a lot of really great conversation happening in the community.
Tons.
We had a story last week. We talked a little bit about the photos kind of moving, well, being duplicated into Drive as opposed to operating outside of Google Plus or inside Google Plus on the phone.
Which, by the way, did you go into Drive today? Did you see? I just noticed it today on the browser.
Oh,
I went into Google Drive on my account and I got an alert saying your Google Plus photos are coming into Drive, and do you want to set up a folder?
Prepare.
And it gave me my last like 10 photos, and then it's like, stay tuned, more is coming.
Yeah, no, I did that last week, and like two photos appeared, and I haven't checked since, but I checked all throughout that day, and it was still the same two
photos.
Too.
Me too. Anyway,
like, okay.
I just checked mine, and it's not up yet, but I'm interested to see what this interface looks like when it's full of my photos.
Yeah.
Because then I don't know how useful it'll be.
Yeah, that's
true. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with every photo I've ever taken.
That's
like
really
I need some kind of machine learning like search thing where I can be like, show me photos of people, and it'll like go through and do that, because right now it's just a list of pictures.
For me it's the photos that it did have, it's a list of file names that are IMG and a bunch of numbers,
right?
Or I can go into the tile mode where I can see the thumbnails. Mm-hmm. But I've taken a lot of photos, it's gonna be a ton of thumbnails. Like, I kind of want both. I want to see the file name and a small thumbnail.
I'm sure they'll give you
anyway,
that.
I'm sorry.
I'm sure they'll get there. With that. Steve wrote in to aaa@twit.tv to say, uploading files from Google Plus photos to my website is kind of a pain normally, because I have to download them all from Google Plus, then upload them to the website, even though they're in the Google Cloud and even counting against my Google Drive storage quota. Putting them directly in my drive is a great solution, especially since I use a Chromebook. When a photo auto-uploads from my phone, it'll now appear in my drive and ready to upload to the website without first downloading it locally. So boost my productivity, and has the added side effect of not having to leave Google Drive to find to go find my photos in Google Plus. So that's a cool way to do it, be able to kind of have that automatically sync and everything. Vance McAllister, longtime fan of the show, definitely very active in the Google Plus community, placed a post that was a little
antagonistic.
he didn't appreciate our tone in the conversation, and certainly his opinion was shared with others. He said, "No, guys, Google Plus is not being dismantled. Bradley Horowitz, who is now heading up the internal department that includes Google Plus, renamed Photos and Streams by Sundar recently, which we talked about, mentioned their internal divisions and this name change, and everyone goes nuts saying that they're breaking Google Plus into multiple services. No, it has been confirmed by Googlers that it is simply not the case. This new ability to access your Google Plus photos in Drive is just that, the ability to access Google Plus photos in Drive. We've been asking for that for years, and they have been working on it, giving us that option for a long time. Will they eventually remove the existing photos feature from Google Plus? Not likely, but they might encourage people to use Google Photos in Drive as their primary focus." Definitely check out the thread. There's a lot of people in there that went back and forth. And
we never said they were getting rid of Google Plus. We never said that.
I would like to offer a rebuttal. He kept calling it Google Plus Photos. Look at it in Drive. It is called Google Photos. There is no plus in there. Yep. Just the facts. Google Plus has not had a feature update for a year now. Gundotra left and development stopped.
It's true.
So If they're rebooting or something, fine, but just we haven't seen anything out of Google Plus for a very long time, and that's where all this Google Plus is dying stuff comes from, because everybody just stopped.
Yeah, like the,
it's a
the,
fair point.
It is a fair point. The skeptical, like the Google fan part of me wants to go, yes, they said these things, so Google Plus is not going anywhere, because I love Google Plus.
Yeah, but the skeptical Google part Reader, of me is, Google Reader wasn't going anywhere
well,
either
that's the
for
thing.
Years.
Right, exactly. The skeptical part of me is like, well, yeah, of course they're going to say that if they're planning on getting rid of it, because they're not there yet. Right. But, you know, I suppose you never know. We don't know for or against. That, though, what you just said, Ron, I think is very good evidence of something happening here that is not business as usual as far as Google Plus is concerned. If there has not been a significant update to the features of Google Plus, and in fact, features that were once part of Google Plus are kind of moving into their own territory, that's like negative features.
Yep.
Suddenly you're in the negative, and that, I don't know, hearing that doesn't bode very well. But
yeah, I love Google Plus, but just the facts. It's not looking good.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I don't know with anything. I don't know what's going to happen.
What is up? What is down? I don't know anymore. Oh, this world we live in. This Google world.
So much Google drama.
All right. Let's thank another sponsor of today's episode, LegalZoom. I'm a big fan of LegalZoom. Used them about 5 years ago when our first daughter was born to put together our living will and testament. It was just an easy process. Five things that you can count on when using LegalZoom for your business. If you want to use LegalZoom for your business, they're this fantastic resource. Number one, reliability. More than a million people have already trusted LegalZoom to help start their business. If you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC, a nonprofit, get a DBA, or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. And number two, experience. They've been helping business owners with legal challenges for more than a decade. And you can count on LegalZoom for all of the details. They'll take care of the details for you. They'll know to point them out, and you can kind of you can put your trust in them. Number three, helpful support. They have the right people on hand to answer your questions, all based in the U.S., in the United States. Number four, legal advice. Since they're not a law firm, LegalZoom built a network of independent attorneys available in most states. They can give advice on the best ways to get started, plus provide contract review and other useful services to help run your business. And finally, number five, no surprises, LegalZoom provides complete transparency with upfront pricing and customer reviews, and they have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. I'm sure this sounds good. Like I said, I love LegalZoom. The process was easy, and man, I just ended up with this packet that I got. We put right into our safe deposit box, and we have it done. Peace of mind. Make the smart choice for your business at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter AAA at checkout to save even more. That's LegalZoom.com, promo code AAA. We thank LegalZoom for their continued support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. All right. We got some apps to talk about. Let's do it. All right, just a few quickies in the apps. This first one, well, I'm the only one here with kids.
You're the
only
one that's impacted by it.
I guess I have to.
Are you getting on the board? Are you adding your name to the complaint?
No. YouTube Kids, the official YouTube app that puts a bunch of kid-friendly content into a separate app aimed at children, is under fire for advertising too aggressively to kids inside the app. The Federal Trade Commission here in the U.S. is reviewing complaints by a few consumer groups that junky food ads and toy ads are mixed in too closely with the content kids are watching, making them indistinguishable, they say. On TV, of course, limits are placed on ad time that's mixed in with children's content. Those rules don't actually extend to the internet. And you know, these consumer groups are basically saying, like, Google is taking advantage of the kids who are locked inside the app and showing too many ads. I've noticed ads inside the app, but you get those ads if you're just watching on YouTube anyways. Is it more or less? No, I wouldn't say that it's more.
And I like the comparison to children's television programming on TV. Like, I don't know about you, but I've watched TV with my nieces when they're watching Disney or the Cartoon Network or whatever.
Crazy.
And it's ads all the time. And it's cereal.
I'm just taking a guess here, but on I know on TV, The thinking was that kids can't tell the difference between a TV show and an ad. So there has to be a message in between that says, like, we'll be back after
After these messages.
Do they do that on YouTube? Right. I was thinking of that stupid jingle, too. But do they do that on YouTube Kids? Because that could be what the complaint is all about.
No, not that I've noticed. They don't do that.
And they probably need to.
Yeah. But at the same
time. Maybe
what
they need to do is play that.
After these messages,
I'm sure it's up there. The 5-second jingle. Oh, I totally remember.
But the thing is, though, this isn't TV.
Yeah, I know. That's the difference, right?
Yeah, that's the difference. And so you got to figure out the new rules and the new type thing. But, you know, I don't know if the FTC even has any say over this.
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose we'll find out. I don't know if I buy it. But maybe I'm just really relaxed with my kids watching.
Let's see how your daughter comes back asking for.
I would much rather, like, you know, my daughter has watched plenty of TV, and there's tons of ads on TV, and I hate that. Like, I leave the room. It's a half an hour show, and she probably got 10 ads, you know, during that half hour. Versus watching something on YouTube, and
that's
it's
just
like,
contained,
and she knows how to skip it. Yep. So it's like, you know what I mean? So it's just different. And I don't know if it's necessarily any worse in the in the virtual world.
Parents are going to complain. Parents are going to parent.
It's true.
All the time. So over on the Amazon side of things, I know we all rejoiced when Amazon finally released an Amazon Prime instant video app. And then we all cried when we realized you had to download it through the Amazon App Store.
I know. The process is really weird.
And then we cried a little more when we realized it was phone only. Well, so now you can roll back some of those tiers because it's now been optimized for tablets. So you still have to go into the Amazon App Store to download it. You still have to navigate the Amazon website to choose the video you want to. But once you find that video you want and you press watch, it will launch in the Amazon Prime Video app on your tablet.
Oh, you can send it to Chromecast, right?
No, can't send it to Chromecast. Nope, not so much.
Okay. Yeah. So there's still stuff to be upset about.
Baby steps from Amazon and video, instant video. So, but they're progressing.
Do you think Amazon will ever support Chromecast?
Not as long as Fire TV's around. Yeah. That's what this is. This is them giving up on the Kindle tablet, I guess, a little bit.
I
don't know. That's why I'm just like, Amazon Prime? Nope, not really. Don't care, because, I mean, I have Amazon Prime. But the video thing, I'm just like, well, I can't use it on anything. So
it's my last stop. It's when I'm looking for something. Yeah. When I'm looking for something to watch, like I was looking for Clue. I was looking for the movie Clue, and it wasn't on Netflix. I couldn't find. I found it on Amazon. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I can fire up the old Google TV and watch it and go full screen in the browser, and then that'll work. It's always my last stop. So,
Yep. Totally agree. Real quick here, Facebook launched a new app. Did you hear?
I did.
It's called Riff. Got it right here. It's a video app. It's kind of like...
It's like Vine?
I'm doing a review of this on this week's Android App Arena. And it's kind of like Snapchat meets Vine.
Meets Messenger. Meets...
Meets charades. Because basically what it is it's riffing on an idea. So, right? Like, one person... This is featured, by the way. So, none of my friends actually posted this that I know of. But the... You know, it's called Will It Juggle? And so, the first person will post... Wow, this is really... Oh, I guess he was juggling the phone. The first person will post a short video of themselves juggling, let's say.
Right.
And then they'll pass it along like a hot potato to all their friends, and they'll continue to riff on the idea and add a video to it and everything like that. So, I mean, it's kind of neat. I did... Oh, I guess I'm part of that one. This is the Yo one, where people are just kind of doing this thing for some reason. Went ahead and did that. I did Easter eating, and I was like, you know, it's Easter, and I'm eating, so I'll do one. And that's no one
picked up on that. Yeah,
which, you know, ends up kind of being the thing, which is like, how do these get started? You know, it's such a fine line between launching something like this and it taking off, and suddenly everybody's riffing
but
on everything.
You got to put it out there.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, you won't know until you find out.
I think it's neat. I think it's an interesting concept.
I like seeing them develop stuff other than Facebook. I mean, that's cool, you know. I think that's neat. So, good for them.
Yeah. So, I think it's nifty. Obviously, Facebook has, you know, it's Facebook. So, their cards are based on Facebook users and stuff. So, it's kind of a little locked in as a result. Like, it would be nice to open it up a little bit wider than just that. So a lot of my friends on Facebook aren't techies.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't really care, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But
I'm happy to see. Was it a simultaneous release on Android and iOS?
Yes.
So I'm happy to see that at least.
This week in Cartwheel.
There we go. Is that it?
This is in our kitchen.
Oh, that's actually in Twit. There you go.
Yeah.
This just seems like Vine, but a little longer.
It is like Vine, but the purpose is not to make a 6-second movie that everybody watches and go, you know, and like has a narrative or whatever. It's meant to be riffed on. So it's like take an idea and do something around that idea.
Remix it.
Yeah. I just learned that Josh cannot do a cartwheel. it's okay. Yeah. It's okay, Josh. That's not a cartwheel, Tony.
Okay.
So there you go. It's called Riff. Check it out. It's free. And
Thumbs up on doing a new idea, putting something new out there and releasing it on both platforms at the same time. Good job, Facebook. I applaud you. We got another video mail.
What do you know? Two in one week. We haven't had one in months.
I know.
I love it.
So Ty sent in this video mail about a phone training session. So let's find out.
Hey, I've got a quick tip for Jonathan, the guy who wrote in last week asking for how best to do some phone training. I was thinking, once you get your screen mirrored up on the Chromecast, what might make it even better is if you could turn on some visual feedback to show up there exactly where you're tapping on the screen. To do that, you're going to have to unlock the developer settings by, well, going into settings. I think on TouchWiz, you may need to go into a More tab and find About Phone here on the bottom. Then scroll to the bottom of that, tap on the build number, about 7 or 8 times. And it's saying I'm already a developer because I've already done that, but it'll tell you once you've tapped it enough, then jump back out into the developer settings and find and check the box for show touches. And there you go. Hopefully that can give your training sessions a little more pizzazz.
And that's a very good tip relating back to our question from last week about someone who's doing training on mobile devices, looking for a way to display it on a screen. We suggested Chromecast. And yeah, totally forgot about the touch indicator.
Yeah,
that's a great way.
That every week on Android App Arena. That's how I show the touches.
And that was really quick. But to unlock that, you need to unlock the developer options.
Right.
There are instructions online to find that. Need to tap the build number. What was
it? You tap it 7 times, and each time it's like 3 more times, and you become a developer. You know, it's like a magical switch. Suddenly, you're a developer.
Yeah, it's like the Wizard of Oz.
And it opens up that extra section in settings for. Developer settings.
So great.
So cool. Awesome. Thank you. I love your video mails.
Yes, keep them coming.
At twit.tv, just attach a link to your video mail. And as you can see, like if you send your question in the form of video, we'll probably end up playing it.
That's awesome.
It's dynamic.
Yeah, definitely.
So thank you.
Send more in.
Do it.
All right, let's thank our last sponsor of the evening. We want to thank Gazelle for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. Listen, if you're in the market for a new phone, if you just dropped your phone on the pavement and you don't have the $600 laying around to buy a new Nexus 5 like me, you want to check out Gazelle. Now you can buy certified pre-owned Android phones, Samsung Galaxy phones, tablets, all other devices up on Gazelle. If you've lost or broken your phone, a certified pre-owned device is a great way to buy a low-cost replacement device. Gazelle still offers great deals and trade-ins for your old devices, so don't worry. Their core business is still there. But now you can visit gazelle.com to see what devices are available in certified pre-owned conditions. So what are the benefits of buying a certified pre-owned device from Gazelle? The devices are available in 2 different modes, certified like new and certified good. Certified good devices show some gentle signs of wear, but offer consumers who want to save a little extra money a great device at a great price. All devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection to ensure they're fully functional. And certified pre-owned devices are backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. So you get the phone, try it. You got 30 days, try it out. If you don't like it, send it back. Find another device. It's literally as easy as possible when it comes down to it. You get tons of benefits from trading your device into Gazelle. You can get paid in cash. Payment is fast, within a few days of your item being received. It's risk-free. Gazelle will also wipe your data for free, so you don't have to worry about sending in your device and worrying about somebody getting all your passwords, things like that. Gazelle is trustworthy and will completely wipe your data from your device, so you don't have to worry about that. Gazelle has paid nearly $175 million to over 1 million customers, which is a lot of money to a lot of people. It's easy. They offer free shipping. Most items qualify for a free box. It's a fast process. No hassles in listing your device. You just send in your device. They list it and pay out very quickly. You don't need to worry about it. Gazelle makes it super easy. So find out what your Android phone is worth. Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. And if you're in the market for a new phone, check out their certified pre-owned devices. Thank you, gazelle.com, for sponsoring this episode of All About Android.
All right. Thank you, Gazelle. Get yourself an S6 Edge.
Yeah, why not?
Get rid of that Note 4 or whatever you happen to have. There you go, gazelle.com. Okay, it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Man, I'm going to slide.
I don't want to get too cocky.
Yeah, you're on a roll. I'm going to slide,
you're
on a roll.
I don't want to get a little, I don't want to get too confident, but I know I started off slow.
Yeah, and I started off strong.
And you started off strong.
People did not like
Kinsey. The ebb and flows.
Yeah, this is just how it goes. Hey, a year's a long time, okay? let's see here. Your app, Droop, came in at top 42%. Broad City Keyboard. Now, I'm pretty sure that Florence didn't think she was going to score this high.
I was surprised to see it get that high.
But it came in second at 33%. Nuzzle at third place at 19%. And Pinsy at 6%.
So now here's my analysis of this.
All right.
All right. Of these four apps, Nuzzle was the winner. Nuzzle was the best app of those four. I mean, that was on my list to use. I thought that was a surefire winner. So I'm kind of shocked that didn't.
You never know.
Your app, while cool, very limited to just the watch owners.
I honestly didn't expect that it was going to be like a runaway hit. Yeah. It was more just like a, oh, this can do it like an Apple Watch, blah, blah, blah.
And I think the Broad City keyboard app was more of a vote for Florence.
Yeah.
Who's becoming very popular amongst all that Android crowd.
That's true.
But then Droop is actually a pretty handy app, so check it out. So I'm just going to sit back because I get to go last now.
Just go ahead and enjoy your win.
Yes, I will.
Maybe have a drink of water or something.
Maybe I will.
Let's see here. Okay, so that means that I lost, so I go first. My app – here, I have to pull it up. I have to have all the information that I need here.
Yeah, yours has got some hoops to jump through.
It has some hoops. Okay,
it's actually not as bad as it used to be.
No, it's really not that bad in general. This is a beta app right now, which basically means you can only see the app in the Play Store when going to the link if you become a tester. So the way you do this, okay, so the app is called Automate. You go to the Automate community in Google Plus, the link will be in the show notes at twit.tv/AAA or the QR code that you see on the screen. You join the community. That's step one. Then you're going to become a tester. There's a link on that page that allows you to go through and accept being a tester for it. And then the Play Store link will work for you and you can run it. And what is Automate? Automate for Android is, doesn't that kind of look like Android Auto?
It kind of does.
And it's like running on the phone?
Wait a minute.
Android Auto running on the phone? Could this be?
Is this magic?
More or less, it's a version of... It's not a true port of Android Auto for the phone, but dang if it doesn't look
it really does operate.
It's just a clone of it, I think. Yeah. I like this. This is what I was going to pick.
Oh,
before,
man, I'm sorry.
Before you got in on that.
I'm sorry that I did that. So, anyways, so yes, it's basically Android Auto, but running on your phone. Something that we've complained about on the show is that why can't Android Auto just run on your phone? You don't want to use your phone. You want the benefit of Android Auto. Why does it have to be another screen? Just give it to me on this screen, and I will be happy.
It's cool.
Yeah. So you know, it works in a lot of the same ways. I'm sure there are some ways. Fantastic CD, by the way.
They can't integrate the music app.
Right. There's some integrations that are lost, and I think that's kind of the bigger picture. But it does integrate in, let's see here, go back there. It does kind of give you those shortcuts and allow you to control more or less. So, you know, and you can add different apps, shortcuts to different apps from your home. I'm still learning.
Now you've crashed.
No, I went. You're right. I may have just crashed. This is more like your notification screen of kind of like recently done things. So you've got your weather. I've got my little music on there. How fast I'm going. So it'll kind of tell you its approximation.
In kilometers.
I could probably change that. No, I played with this very little, but I like what I see. And like I said, it's beta. So, you know, you can't even get it through the Play Store. It's so beta unless you become a tester. And the directions for doing that can be found at the Automate for Android beta Google Plus community. You join there. you click the link to become a tester, and then you can download it. And I don't know, you know, I think even the developer, like his last post to the community was, wow, this blew up in a way I was not expecting. Thanks for everyone's feedback. So even he's surprised. He's just like, he's doing the thing that makes perfect sense, which is bring out Android Auto. And I knew someone was going to do it. Bring Android Auto to the mobile device so that everyone can kind of experience it. And he's making steps to do it. I'm sure it's going to improve a lot because right now, like you said, Ron, some of the integrations aren't quite there. And I think even navigation, like if I was to navigate, let's see here.
Well, like if you open music, and how do you get back to this screen?
Yeah, I know, right? So, like, oh, right now I've set.
Oh, what? It works now?
Now I've got it set as audible.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
So I wonder.
So it opens the app, but then once you go back into it, it switches.
So this is more like a media player. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
See, so now how do you launch Google Music? Oh, there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how do you
But it takes me back over. Yeah, exactly. So
it's still a hybrid. It's like
it
a
is
little,
totally a hybrid. Yeah. I wish it would kind of stay here, you know.
The thing about this app though is like Android Auto is on your phone. Mm-hmm. And at some point somebody's gonna figure out just how to turn it on with like a switch. And then you'll be able to run the real version. And, I mean, best of luck to, I mean, this is cool for now, but
agreed.
You'll be able to run you have to be able to run Android Auto on a phone eventually. Like someone will hack it.
And I mean, and ultimately I'd be really surprised if Google didn't just kind of eventually end up there anyways. Like for me, it makes perfect sense. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't want that initially. Like, I know that their goal is to keep you off your phone while you're driving, but what's the difference between my phone with that interface versus a screen in my dash with that interface? That's what I don't get. What's the difference there?
The size. Maybe the size and safety. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. But anyways, this is a good start. This is a good way around it. And I think, you know, he's going to be able to develop this into something even better. And possibly once it's out of beta and released officially, some of these kinks will be worked out. It's a great start. So big props to, is it Kataf Alam, who is the developer of Automate. So check it out. It's called Automate, one word. And just search for the community for Automate. That's a great starting point, and you can play with it yourself. All right.
Google's making this journalist stuff hard, man. I have to get a car now to review Android Auto. That's what you have to do.
But you don't have to buy it, right? Ars Technica with their deep, deep pockets is going to be...
You get that company Impala. Uh-huh. And they'll roll that.
You got to do it. You got to do it, right?
No, hopefully we'll get, like a loaner or something.
Yeah.
Hold out for one that you own. Could be your Christmas bonus or something.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ron Amadio, I've installed your app. The name kind of threw me for a loop, I will admit.
Yeah, I actually think it's called Pocket, and I actually think it predates the Pocket.
I think it probably does. Yeah.
But it's like it's kind of like a digital wallet, not like to buy stuff, but like to just kind of have a backup of all the stuff that's in your wallet. You kind of set up an account. For starters, though, the app design is horrible. I mean, they have this skeuomorphic leather crap up there. But like you can have a backup of all your credit cards and your driver's license number and bank accounts and all that stuff. And it sits in like an encrypted file on your Dropbox. And if you like lose your wallet or something or lose a credit card, you'll have the number, the phone number for the bank, and, you know, you'll be able to call whoever you need to call and, you know, get a card or something. And I've lost a credit card before, and this, you know, this kind of saved me. I was just able to look up, oh, what was that card? Because, you know, if you lose something, it's hard to remember, you know, I'm like, it's the red card, but like it's from some kind of bank. There's some kind of phone number that you need to call. So yeah, you can kind of back up all the stuff, and it's very nice. Yeah. Just hit the add entry button down there. And, you can type in, you know, if your car gets stolen, you'll be able to tell the cops your VIN number and your license plate.
Oh, right.
And all that stuff. So it's nice to have this backed up somewhere, and this is a fun little app that'll do it. And like there's other stuff out there, like 1Password will do all this too, but that costs money, and there might even be a monthly fee or a yearly fee, but I don't know. But this is just like a free way to kind of back up all that stuff, and it's encrypted and it's on your Dropbox, and you know control the data, So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I like that it syncs to your Dropbox. That's what kind of makes an app like this super useful, because then you're not locked into the app specifically. And
right, yeah, into some dude's cloud infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cool. Yeah, the name did throw me for a loop. So if you're searching for this, do a search for Pocket Tim Clark, who's the developer. And if you put those, Pocket and Clark or Pocket and Tim, it'll probably pull it up. Because if you do just Pocket straight up, you're going to get Pocket, the Read Later service, because it's immensely popular. So Pocket Tim Clark is the developer, and do a search for that and you'll be able to find it. It's a good way to kind of consolidate all of that important information into an encrypted folder on your Dropbox. I like it. And that is free. Okay, Ron Richards.
All right.
You are up.
So if you're on Twitter, you've probably noticed that there's been a huge surge in streaming video apps that is all the rage.
A little bit.
It's kind
of a thing.
Yeah, people playing with the Meerkat and people playing with the newly released Periscope. What are the two things that Meerkat and Periscope have in common? They're not on Android. There's an unofficial Meerkat app, but there's no official Meerkat app. And
the unofficial one's just a viewer.
Exactly. And Periscope is iOS only. For some reason, I think Twitter has a bias against Android. I don't know why. That's my gut. But so it got me thinking, everyone's into this whole streaming thing. There's got to be an alternative here on Android. And I did some searching and I found this app called Stream, STR.AM, which is basically live video streaming. It basically does everything that Meerkat and Periscope does, but off of your Android platform in their own little stream community. So I've got it here on my phone. So once you launch it, it's real simple interface. Basically down here, you can see what live streams are going on right now. And so if we wanted to watch somebody's live stream, I'm not going to though, because you never know what you get, but these are people who are streaming. They also have the option to save reels, where they can record something and save it and keep it publicly available so you can watch something. And then if you connect to friends, they have a section for your friends' reels to show up. I actually don't have any friends connected here as of yet. Speaking of connecting to friends, under the friends tab, it suggests some people who are very active in their community, but then you can connect to your Facebook or Twitter or Google Plus friends. I haven't done this yet because I have a lot of people following me, so it takes a while to go through that. So, but it makes it easy for you to find your friends and connect to them directly. And then you've got your own little profile section where you can upload your avatar, and it tells you how many streams you've done, how many you subscribe to, how many subscribers you have. And here's where you can get to, where you can link your social accounts and where you can set your notification settings. You can ask to be notified when someone subscribes to you, or when someone subscribes to your stream, or get an email when that happens. But the core of the functionality is the streaming. And so what happens now is that once you start, once you hit up the stream, the interface actually is really, really nice. Of course, the home button goes back home. The big red button is to start recording. There are two options. There's the streaming option or the reel option. So if I didn't want to stream live, I don't have to. I can just record video locally. Within the streaming option, you can choose whether or not to show your location. I'm not showing my location here. You can choose what camera, whether you want the front or rear-facing camera. You can choose whether to turn the flash on or whether you want to save your stream or not. So it's pretty cool. So I'm going to start streaming. So as of right now, I am streaming live to the internet,
woo!
A table. So that's cool, but how does anybody know to find me? You hit this little plus button, and you can get back to settings. You can turn the flash on. You can change the camera. But there's your share button. And so now I can share to Twitter or to SMS or whatever I want. And I say, hey, check me out, and I can post it. I've already connected it. I'm not going to because it's boring. But that is a way that people can connect to watch a stream. They don't need the app. They can watch it on the web, or if they're in the stream app, they can watch it in the stream community.
Oh, so it is viewable on the web.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, okay. So it's basically live streaming from your Android phone. So there you go. When you're done streaming, if you want to take the camera there again, when you're done streaming, it can show you how many. I had two viewers during those 40 seconds. I got no likes. Doing that, not saying anybody, there's already a community there, people that are looking for it, and I didn't do anything, and two people found me in that short period of time. Mm-hmm. So if you're into being what's the not voyeuristic exhibitionist stream might be a new platform for you to find out who where they are.
Right
so,
on.
So there you go. So stream live streaming, stream live video, free in the Google Play Store. So you don't need to be left out of the fun with Meerkat and Periscope. You can stream too. So
they're just leaving the Android folks out.
They always do. I'm telling you, that's my problem.
Almost always.
See, just in doing that, someone by the name of rfoster327 subscribed to me. So
you have at least a new viewer next time.
Robert in Fort Worth.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
Yeah.
That's why we need ARP. Then it'll work on every operating
system. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There we go. All right. So that is stream. That's street.am.
Yeah.
But I'm sure if you just put stream live video, you'll find it. Yep. Pocket. Do a search for Pocket Tim Clark. Find it. And then Automate, which you won't be able to search in the Play Store because you need to go to the community on Google Plus and do all that stuff first. So it's kind of a weird...
So Ron's app is the only one anyone will find.
Yes, I know. It's kind of a weird week this week.
Instant win.
Anyways, AAAPoll.com/208. AAAPoll.com/208.
Oh my gosh, is that live?
Well, it doesn't refresh.
It's not live. No, it's not live.
Yeah, it doesn't refresh. Yeah,
well,
so
Victor.
Let's see here. And I'm not sure
you
how
to
many.
Vote for mine.
I like Ron's the only guest who's just straight up vote for me.
Come on, get me on the board. Get me on the board. Come on.
There we go.
All right, there's fine.
Oh wow. Okay.
Fine. There you go. AAAPoll.com/208. We'll check in on it next week as we usually do.
My guess is Automate is going to win.
Yeah, mine too.
That's my guess.
You never know.
I wondered Automate too.
Yep. All right. I can't wait. Can't wait to win then, if that's the case. That's it for this week. Good show.
Good show. Good times.
Good times. Ron Amadio, always a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always awesome being on. This is fun.
Right on. So obviously you're writing cool stuff at ArsTechnica.com, and I'm sure you have lots of other, you know, jam-packed articles like you normally do. That's how you roll.
Yes. Next project is this thing, which is Monday, I guess. I about. It's just a lot of work.
That's I was going to say, okay, so
it ain't easy being Ron Amadio. That's what I'm learning this week.
I'm sure you collect notes at this point, but you haven't started actually writing the thing. Does that take days?
Oh no, I started writing about it before I had it, man. There's backgrounds you can do, and okay. You know what's happened to Samsung in the last like year or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it's nice. Like, it's got to be positive. It's a cool phone.
Yeah.
But you know, I have to go through my nitpicky stuff like with Flipboard and all that. And it's just the default software is a little rough. But other than that, the phone's great. And Qualcomm dropped the ball so bad. Like all these phones with the 810 are just so hot and slow and throttle so much. The 810 throttles like 30%. It's insane.
Wow. Wow.
But Samsung's got Exynos, so they're going to survive, and everybody else is in trouble.
I don't know. That S6 Edge was a little warm.
Yeah.
So
it was warm. You handed it to me earlier. It was warm. Yeah.
Well, really appreciate you coming on the show. ArsTechnica.com. Where can people find you on the Twitter and on the Google Plus and all that?
At Ron Amadio. It's down there. And plus Ron Amadio on Google Plus.
Right.
Just my name everywhere. Just Google me. You'll find something.
I have to imagine there aren't a whole lot of Ron Amadios out there.
Nope, it's just me. I dominate those search results. Hey,
that's awesome.
Good job.
Good job. Good work. Right on. Well, we'll have you back soon, sir. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
What about you, Ron?
I do not.
The other Ron.
I do not dominate the search results. I believe there's also a politician, a lawyer, I think like a clown or some sort of like entertainer. There's lots of different Ron Richardses out there. But I make it easy for you. You can go to about.me/RonXO where you can find links to all my social media stuff, Google+, Instagram, Twitter, all the fun stuff. And by day, I'm at Image Comics. We're at imagecomics.com, where we've got great comic books like Saga and The Walking Dead. And this past weekend, I was in Anaheim at WonderCon. The weekend before that, I was in Seattle at Animal City Comic Con. And I want to give a shout out to everybody who came up and said hello and showed me their phones and said they were proud All About Android watcher. More than I thought would show up, especially in Anaheim. I don't want to say specific names. I know I'm going to forget somebody, but it was enough people that I might forget their name. So it was a steady flow of seeing phones. So,
that's awesome.
My favorite is that I'm at our booth and I'm actually selling comic books and someone's at the table and it's retail. So I always go, oh, hey, can I help you? Or can I get it? And one guy pulls his phone out and goes, yeah, I heard you know how to fix Android phones. And then started laughing. So it was nice. It was great to see everybody in person. And I'll be in Chicago in a couple of weeks for C2E2. So if you are a Android, All About Android viewer in Chicago, come say hi there.
Radical.
So, yeah.
Right on. Thank you, Ron. Brian, what about you, sir?
Well, when I'm not pushing buttons on this show, I'm also working on Know How with Padre. We do some fun projects, a lot of quadcopter stuff lately, but you know what? They're really cool. And it's kind of a show. That show is an excuse for us to play with the things that we like. And then also BYB, do reviews on there occasionally, so check that out. And you can also follow me on Twitter at @cranky_hippo.
Man, you are so subdued right now.
I'm kind of tired today. I was working on a project all day today.
Yeah,
and then it didn't work at the end, so it was really frustrating. And then Burke said he could fix it, and I'm not so sure that's going to happen.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's dark over here, too.
I was going to say, yeah, turn on some lights, man. Well, cool. Well, thanks for being an awesome TD. You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. I have some music at yellowgoldmusic.com. I do another show about Android called Android App Arena. It's at twit.tv/arena. And if anything, just go there because, it's like four apps a week, if not more. Some of them have been on this show. I really try not to do as much overlap, but every once in a while one gets
A little more in-depth on that show,
yeah, exactly.
Too.
I mean, if you like want a topic. It's like a genre.
Right. If the arena is – if you want more meat on the bone than the arena, then the arena show is where you can find it.
Bone.
Yeah.
That's so hard, isn't it? Four apps a week. I don't know how you do it, man. I was racking my brain to come up with one app.
Yes, to answer your question. Yes, it is so hard. It is so difficult to do. But I must do it because I started a show where I have to do it.
You're better off now than what, 4 or 5 years ago when I was doing App Judgment difficult. At Rev 3. That was doing an app a day in 2007. That was tough.
It's difficult. Yeah. But it's not impossible, and that's a testament to kind of where Android is now versus even a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it forces me to be creative, to be honest. Yeah. Like I'm not always just featuring the big name apps. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I have to get really creative and find one that just launched, and just play around with it and feature it and see how it goes. So, but it's a lot of fun, and I learn a lot about apps by reviewing 4 to 5 each week. So there we go. So that's twit.tv/arena. But that is it for this week. Love hearing from you guys, as you heard and saw today. 347-SHOW-AAA is our phone number. You can leave us a message. You can send us an email or a video mail. Send that to AAA@twit.tv. We love those. We are on Twitter. We're at Android Show. We have a subreddit. twitaaa.reddit.com. We're on Google Plus. We have an amazing community there. Just search for All About Android. You'll find it. Show notes and past episodes can always be found at our show page, twit.tv/AAA, and past episodes at YouTube and iTunes, and a live show every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.